Hello and welcome to Fratello Talks. I'm your host, Nacho. This week, I'm joined by my colleagues,
Morgan
and
RJ.
And we're going to be giving you the lowdown on Watches and Wonders 2024. We're going to be covering our experience, some aspects of the show, a little bit the general mood, things that have changed, and also going through some highlights for ourselves and just in general from the show. But before we do that, let's do a little bit of a wrist check. RJ, what's on your wrist?
Today, I'm wearing the Omega Speedmaster Professional with a white dial.
Very
Hello
nice.
Hello yeah. there.
That's new. That's nice.
Yeah.
Very really cool to see it in person. Yeah.
This is not your own watch.
No, it's a loaner for review.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yours will probably come if you like it.
I hope it's, I hope so.
Not for sale, like Daniel Craig's.
Not for sale, no.
Planet Ocean.
No.
But, it's a cool watch. Not for sale version. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Really, really nice. That's very really cool to see it in person. Morgan, what's on your wrist?
My beloved Tudor FXD on the blue dial, the French Marine National one.
Cool. And that's not the OEM strap, right?
No, that's CNS, cheapest cool. NATO strap. NATO, yeah.
Like cool. And you chopped away the extra
always,
extra bit.
Always, always. Oh, okay. Pretty much, not always, but yeah, pretty much.
Cool. Very nice. I'm wearing a watch that's new to me. It's also a Tudor FXD.
It's
the black version, the USN, call it what you will. And I'm currently wearing it on the OEM strap.
That's nice.
It's a watch I've been after for quite a bit of time. And then the opportunity came by to call the one my own and jumped on it. So and very happy to have it.
I also saw something new is the beard is gone.
Oh, yeah, but that was last week already.
Yeah, I know.
That was last week
but
already.
But people don't know that yet.
I lost it in a shaving accident.
Oh.
Yeah. Perfect. So let's get into it. Let's leave Rolex and Tudor a little bit more towards the end, but let's start with in fact, before starting with highlights, let's take a look at what the show was like for us. You've been to Watches and Wonders before. You've been to Watches and Wonders and many other fairs before. Mm-hmm. I've been to Watches and Wonders 2 years prior.
Yeah.
What were some of the biggest differences that you guys felt from the show this year as compared to previous years?
Shall I start?
Yeah, go for it.
Well, someone said somewhere it was Watches and Wonders and Watches but No Wonders this year. I feel a little bit the same. So in overall, I felt it was a little bit flat or dull, as you will. Mm. Of course, there are some exceptions. We will go into them later on. But there was nothing that really excited me, which I missed. Every year, there's at least something that excites me or that I want to have.
Like a release that you really see yourself buying.
Yeah,
or
exactly.
Own,
And I didn't see that this year. Not unfortunately for me, but I think in general, it's unfortunate. Mm-hmm. It also resulted in some brands and retailers complaining a little bit that retailers were not really enthusiastic buyers. Let me put it like that. Mm. So it was a bit slow. And brands are very afraid, because of that, brands are very afraid of what will happen, especially also for 2025 next year. So it was very... everyone was a bit reluctant or... careful, I would say.
Yeah.
That what was not the atmosphere for us, watch editors and photographers and so on the show. I think it was well organized. There was a good dynamic.
Yeah, always. I mean,
So it was well organized by Watches and Wonders. We had a nice press room. We could work properly.
Yeah.
It was bigger than ever. So 54 brands, if I'm not mistaken.
54. Yeah, that's right.
It was like a first floor now that I never saw. I mean,
yeah, there used to be a restaurant, but now they open it up, so there are also more brands there. Yeah.
One press room. We were a little bit sort of at the back end of the show, but I have to say, to be honest, it was nice. It was a little bit quieter. Mm-hmm. There was a lot more space. You didn't struggle to find a place
to
sit down.
Yeah.
Plenty of lockers to leave all the equipment and everything, which for press is obviously quite handy. If you want to leave your laptop and your camera gear at some point, if you're just walking around, it's super useful.
Yeah.
So I have to say, it was overall, sort of in general form, was an improvement. Yeah. But I do agree that it was a little bit quieter.
Yeah.
Even on day one, it was a little bit quieter. It wasn't this
in the
this
morning. It was very
rush.
Slow. Yeah.
So that was a little bit. That was also interesting, and that did seem to be. I spoke with a few people, and that did seem to be the general consensus that everything was a little bit. Not underwhelming is not the right word, but just a little bit.
There was
less.
A lot of carefulness. Yeah. I feel
it was a little less whelming.
Yeah.
than before.
Also, what I want to add is that in general, I think the prices have become insane. And I'm not even talking about the 620K Langeoogseune or
600K Piaget.
Exactly. But in general, for the normal watches, I think they went up so much.
Now, when you have like a 10K budget, you don't get that much anymore.
A few years ago, we joked that 10K is the new 5K, but it feels that now 15K is the new 10K.
Yeah, that's for sure. Because now, pretty much all the brands are putting their watches at around 10K or something like that, which is for me, or maybe for you, and maybe for a lot of people, kind of a step. Like, I mean, 10K is something to buy a watch.
It's a big step. And I do think there are also exceptions there. So Bremont was there, Nomos was there, Raymond Weil, which I liked very much, was there. Yeah. And they have more friendly prices. But I think from the big brands that we know, I think only Tudor still operates in that friendly price bracket.
Price.
But not that much. And Tag Heuer is still with their glass box that is like 6.5K.
Yeah, I think it's a good deal.
It's still okay.
Yeah, this is a good deal.
I think in general, it was really expensive.
Other than that, there was also for brands that sort of stuck to that below 10K price point, I think there was also Norcane with a few of their new offerings.
Yeah.
Obviously, the configurator models were quite expensive because they're all precious metal.
Yeah.
Which is nice. It was kind of a funny thing to have the wild one with precious metal outer case and still using this Nortec hard rubber sort of bumper thing within the movement, but then costing around €16,000. But it was an interesting move. Yeah. But I think other than that, all the other brands were well above and beyond 5K and definitely well above and beyond 10K in majority of cases. So
and, that's
not,
good.
Not
that
sure what I said, but I meant Norcane and
Raymond Weil.
Raymond and Raymond Weil. I think they were still on point with their prices and all the brands. It becomes so.
Yeah.
But that's good that I didn't know the Altiplano was 600K when I was shooting it.
Ah, okay.
Because I dropped it twice. No, I'm sorry. It's a joke.
Oh, gosh. No, you definitely didn't. I was there. I was was helping you out there. But it's an interesting thing, right? So, for example, with Nomos, we saw them release 31 watches in many different colors. Mm-hmm. I always say Tetra, but it's the Tangente model.
In price.
Yeah,
a little bit.
So those were, €175
less than the regular model.
Yeah. And it was an interesting move, but also kind of cool. I think everybody came out of the booth saying, okay, there's at least a handful that you would happily wear.
Yeah.
And nice that the price was a little bit lower, kind of opening it up to collectors. The other brand that kind of rolled back in price, but also by making a new introduction was notably Bremont. Which has now kind of left this the way that I've understood it, right? Because there was some harsh criticism to the brand, but the way that I understood it is that for a long time the brand was very much centered around producing watches for enthusiasts and not very profitable. And at this point, they've introduced a line parallel to all the things that we know and quite like
that they will still. Produce.
That they will continue to produce, of course. You still will have the Triptych case. You'll still have the MB models, and then this kind of comes on top and introduces a new line, right? So I think change is always difficult in the watch industry. I kind of understand why Bremont have done this. It's a difficult move, but obviously it's trying to put the company in like a new direction. Whether you like the watches or not, then that's at an individual level. Personally, I still prefer some of the older models, like the Supermarine S302, the GMT, and the MB models. The new things were. They were okay. They felt very solid. They're tool watches. They're supposed to be rugged. But at the same time, aesthetically, this calling back to pocket watches with the big lume numerals, it didn't do a lot for me. I feel like brands like Vertex are doing that kind of thing, but a lot better. So
I think they changed too many parameters at once.
Yeah.
So they changed the watch, changed the dial,
the logo,
whole setup, the logo. Font. I think the logo was
a big
mistake,
maybe the logo was a bit too much. But in a way, if you want to go down in price, we already talked about it in the office before, but you have to have another collection, a new collection, because you can't just be like, this one used to cost 3K, now it's 2.
Yeah.
So what would people think,
They
really have to introduce a new collection.
Yeah, but you could have introduced something nice.
Yeah. So, but there were many brands that introduced, there were many brands that did introduce nice things.
Yeah.
We can maybe go through some of our personal highlights from the fair. Morgan, what was the one thing or one?
So you want one or several? For you?
Because give I have several. Give me several.
Okay.
But we'll take turns. Several. We'll take turns.
Okay. Okay. So I'm going to start with
sharing
one.
Sharing is
and then,
caring.
Okay. Yeah, of course. So I'm going to start with one. Yeah. So for me, it was actually on day one of Watches and Wonders. I had the opportunity to shoot pretty much, maybe not all because it's always too much, but Cartier watches.
Mm, yes.
I always loved their design because it's kind of... Design-wise, I don't know, but design-wise is super nice. I mean, you can have the Crash, you can have the Santos, you can. It's not the normal round watch usually. I like the Monopoussoir, the Cartier Tortue Monopoussoir, Monopusher for the English speakers. And... there was two versions, one in platinum and one in yellow gold, I think.
Yeah, yellow gold, yeah.
I only managed to get hands-on with the platinum, but I think my favorite is still the gold one. And I think it's a really, really cool watch.
Sure.
It wears well on the wrist. It's not too big, not too small. It's not that thick. Obviously, for a chronograph, it's a really good-looking watch. And really,
and the movement,
in the end, it's nothing new.
No, no, well, not.
No,
it's a reintroduction, basically.
Of course. Yeah, but like the 222.
Yeah.
Back then.
Yeah, yeah, but that is but 40 years like in between, between, and not with the Tortue.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree. I didn't like the Tortue three-hander that much.
It
I mean, the K-shape is nice, but with three hands,
it's
a bit
maybe.
Thin.
I don't know. There was something too dull.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I agree.
No, I fully agree. That's a nice one. For me, the other nice Cartier one was the Santos Dumont in platinum that runs backwards.
Oh, yeah, that's cool.
That's
cool. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Actually, yeah, for those people who don't know about it, all the numerals are backwards on the dial, and the time is displayed backwards. So I don't know if you can, you will be able to tell the time on the watch, but it's pretty
funky.
You
have an iPhone.
I think if you got that watch, it's all good. You don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, but this one was really cool. Yeah.
I actually one of my highlights from Cartier was a I believe it was a Tank American in platinum with a new dial.
With the brown and burgundy
sort
of kind of
burgundy
dial.
Burgundy tone.
Yeah, that was nice.
I quite like that.
Art Deco.
Like
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But it was good. It just, those with the curve, they always wear so well on the wrist. And I really, I like that one a lot. I thought the dial really worked. It was it was a good one, for sure. For sure, for sure. Cool. RJ, give us some of your highlights.
I made some notes. I have a lot of highlights still.
Yeah, that doesn't
even
worry.
Though it was a little bit dull. A brand that it was not surprising because Morgan and I went to Chopard a few weeks before. So we went there and we saw the new LUC models. And one of the models that we didn't see when we visited Fleurier and Chopard in Geneva was the new LUC jumping hour.
Yeah,
I really like that with the black dial.
Yeah, really, really
the
cool.
Jumping hour at 6 o'clock was really nicely done. But I also like the LUC with the green dial a lot.
This is nice.
The silver dial is also nice, but it reminded me a little bit too much about the dog leg lux from the Omega Constellations, which is not a bad thing, but I don't, I associate it too much with Omega and then not with Chopard. Right. But the green dial one is really nice. And also the price was quite interesting. Expensive, of course.
It's an LUC model.
Yeah, exactly. So 11K Swiss francs, but I think you get a lot of watch for that money.
Yeah, there's a lot going on, like finishing and stuff. It's really
And with where all other prices are, then suddenly, in contrast, it makes it seem like that's a lot of watch.
To be honest, for a micro rotor LUC model, chronometer, and I think it's a Poisson de Genève also, probably. Yes. Yeah, for 11K, you get quite a watch.
Yeah.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah. Super nice.
I don't think that one is Poisson de Genève. I think it's the one from 22K.
True. Yeah, the silver dial.
So no Poisson de Genève, but you save half the price.
Yeah, you save half the price for the seal, yeah. So if I can mention another brand.
Yeah, go ahead.
I really, really enjoyed Parmigiani this year.
Oh, yeah. The Tori collection?
Yeah, the Tonda.
Nice.
It's very nice.
Tonda.
Tonda. But the Toric, I really, really love that watch.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. The price, as it starts at 45K Swiss francs, I believe. The Chronograph Rata Prant is also very nice, much higher priced. But the normal,
the
time-only one, I think it's a really cool watch. Beautiful dials. I like the bezel. The movement is made out of gold.
It's
stunning. I found it's a really good reintroduction of the Toric line.
I took a picture of the PowerPoint slide where it was like, case materials, only precious metal. Movements made of gold. And I was like, this is like an RJ's manifesto on how to make a watch. Yeah. I took a little picture.
And there's a power reserve on the back so you don't care.
No, I love if it's on the back.
Then it's, that's okay. I don't mind. Yeah,
it's really. I didn't know the collection actually. I only knew the Tonda collection, obviously, and I was really impressed by the Toric, to be honest. And now I like the Toric line more than the Tonda. It's really good looking, and it's the size is just.
I mean, the new Tonda is also beautiful.
Yeah, of course, of course.
But yeah, the Toric did it for me this year.
The no date as well, the Tonda no date. Yeah, that beautiful. That was really, really good.
Yeah, with the coppery kind of dial.
It's just like super nice. The symmetry of it, it just works so well. It was really fantastic. We've skipped two things from the two brands that we've just covered, that you've just covered, and it's the skeletonized versions.
With the blue skeletonized version, for the Tonda skeletonized version with a blue kind of dial.
Exactly, but also with Chopard. With Chopard, there was the titanium, skeletonized
Alpine Eagle.
I'm not, as some people know, I'm not the biggest Alpine Eagle fan.
Right.
They had a gold version, a gold chronograph, which is quite thick, but it's nice. I like it. Mm-hmm. The skeletonized version is also nice, but it's in titanium.
Which is not for, of course.
But I think they're nice additions to the collection.
Yeah. I didn't love the skeletonization on that one. I saw a few skeletonized watches that I enjoyed.
So I think they just opened up the dial a little bit, right?
Yeah, exactly. It was sort of for me though, with the skeletonized watches that I enjoyed, I like the Moser Streamliner, the 40 millimeter. Okay. Moser's a brand that there's nothing wrong with it, but it's just not my thing usually. But I have to say that one was really impressive. I really liked it. And the 40 millimeter size works super well for that watch.
Okay. Yeah, interesting.
For sure. And then another highlight for me has to be, I can't decide between Laurent Ferrier or Gégé Lecoultre, but let's go with Gégé Lecoultre. I thought that the new Duomètre lineup was really impressive. Obviously, the prices there are just not even worth mentioning. It's, I think, starting at 48,400 for
you're talking about the blue one.
Yes, exactly. I believe it's the Contième Lunaire with the Seconde Foudroyante. So the second hand is kind of flying around the little subdial, which is really nice. It gives it this very animated look. But I have to say that the symmetry of that one and just the color worked super well. And they've done this Savonnette, so inspired by pocket watches, shape to the case. And it's so good. Yeah. So, so good.
Just make sure the warranty card is filled out.
Absolutely, absolutely, yeah, and then of course their sort of showpiece, their sort of showstopper was the one with the what is it, the tourbillon, I mean that was really impressive.
Oh,
I forget
what
it's called, the Duomètre Helio Tourbillon.
Yeah, that's nice. Yeah,
really impressive. Again, it's just hot horology showing off, right? It's really incredible to see, really, really amazing. But yeah, don't ask about the price.
Would that be a price point? I think it's all over 50K and more. Mm-hmm. Would that be a price point where Gégé Lecoultre is doing well? Because they were so focused on those high-end watches this year.
Yeah,
well, last year they had a regular Reversos, also a chronograph.
Yeah, it was nice also.
Yeah, but this year it's so focused on haute horlogerie on a high level.
But they had
their strongest.
Yeah, but they're not the watchmakers of watchmakers for nothing. So I guess
that's true.
But selling wise, that might also be why the response from retailers that were there to buy was what it was, right? They probably thought, maybe now's not the best moment for these kinds of watches with the market slumping a little bit. There was the Master Ultra Thin Perpetual as well.
Or also 10K more than what it was 4 years ago.
Yeah. True.
No, so my question is really, is that the price point that still sells? So is the rest slowing down, but is everything over 30, 40, 50K?
Yeah,
is
right.
That still doing well?
So I mean, it should very well be, because also when you take a look at the normal Reverso, it went also up in price. So might be the case for them.
No, but it's more like people who have the money to spend between 5 and 15K.
That is that might be slow. So, but is the price bracket above 30, 40, 50K? Is that still a price bracket? Well, it just sells because those people don't have pain.
That's the thing. That's for people. That's for people who have money where it doesn't matter, right? Like you have the house, you have the car or five cars and you
so
know.
So I wonder if it's really a conscious strategy by Jaeger to focus so much on very expensive pieces.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, right? Sort of like really aiming at the people buying the highest end stuff, because those guys don't care what goes on in the economy or in the world.
They're still going to... Brands don't share this information, so we'll never know.
Basically. No, of course, of course, but, of course. But it's an interesting, it could be, a strategy for sure.
Yeah, it could
for
be
for sure. Cool. More highlights.
Let me have some. I'm double checking the name.
Yes.
So for me, another one. That's funny because I was also two more of my favorite are from Laurent Ferrier and JLC. Yeah. So I will go with the Laurent Ferrier then.
Yes.
It's the Classic Moon, the new one.
Yeah.
I think it's super, super nice. I would also choose the gold version.
Oh, okay. I was about to ask. Yeah.
It's just nice. From the pictures in the first place, I was like, will it be too big? Will it be too thick? And in the end, no. In the end, it's just really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just like, wears well on the
size wise, it was really good.
It's I love the design stunning. Of these watches anyway. Yeah. It's super nice. And talking about JLC, maybe I can say one more.
Yeah, for sure.
So first, that was my favorite touch and feel session.
Okay.
JLC. I think it was really interesting, maybe more leaning towards the watch nerd part of things because it was more talking about movement parts and but it was really interesting. Yeah. You saw that the people you were talking to knew what they were saying and that was really nice for us watch enthusiasts, I'd say. And the Duomètre, but the Joker face one. I don't exactly know that.
I'm not sure what it's called. But the salmon dial.
Like with the salmon dial. This one was really impressive too. Really impressive.
Yeah. No, but I do agree. Thinking back, it was one of the better touch and feels. And, and the sometimes you have these brands that are super high end. They play the video and the frame skip and the frame rate drops. Yeah. And you're a little bit like, guys, come on. It's just playing a video. And everything was super smooth. And then the people that were there to present the product really were able to tell you everything, which is not something you can take for granted, right? I mean, every brand should be doing this, but sometimes it's not so much the case. But shout out to those guys.
I didn't experience any negative presentations. I have to say, most brands knew what was up. So
well, I had some, but
photo shoots or presentations.
Both, because it was the same at the same time, which is also part of that's it maybe, being not great.
That's maybe because then you find yourself in a freestyle format, right? Where it's like neither a presentation nor a photo shoot. But anyway, RJ, what's your next highlight?
I still have a few. I like Grand Seiko.
Yep.
Seiko, I have to say. Otherwise, we get a lot of comments about Seiko. This is how we pronounce it in the Netherlands. Yeah. Grand Seiko. The hand-wound calibers, I really like. It's nice. Mm-hmm. I'm not a fan of titanium, but they also do one in rose gold.
Yeah.
Almost 50K, I think, in price. But the titanium one is 11 point something.
Yeah, with the hand one movement, right?
Yeah. The 9S A4 sits really well on the wrist. Yeah. It's really thin. So that's, I think, a nice new release. I also like the Chronograph with the red dial.
Oh, wow.
I felt this one was really the lion.
I really like the dial. It's really awesome. The light.
It's too busy for me.
Yeah, no, it's I like the way the color changes and there's different angles. I think it's really nicely done. I like the bracelet design a lot, but not the clasp. They still have that weird extension system.
And it's really huge also.
Yeah, but it's a diver's
super huge.
Yeah, but it's a diver's watch, and so you need to wear it over your suit and so on. It's not really a diver's watch, but it's a big sports watch.
Yeah, that's true. It's chunky, but at least because the case shape is a little bit non-traditional, it can work. Yeah. What do you think of the new Kodo?
The Kodo 2?
Yes.
Beautiful. I think it's a beautiful piece. They will only make 20, and it will come out in December, and the price is 385K in euros.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's not too far from the original, right?
No, it was also three something.
Yeah, it's also
a beautiful watch. I think it's really.
Is it better? Is the sequel better than the original? In this case,
this one is a bit more. Adds a little bit more transparency towards the movement.
It's lighter, like the color also.
Yeah, the other one was kind of very dark.
Dark,
and it had the gems were still purple, like and this one is very silvery.
Yeah,
and it sort of brings a lot of light into the movement.
Exactly,
it shows a lot more detail.
Yeah, I prefer the second one.
Yeah,
I prefer the Kodo 2.
Yeah. Kudos to the Kodo.
Kudos to the Kodo. I don't think we'll ever see it somewhere in the wild.
Nope.
Wow. In the past, I've seen the first Kodo twice in a boutique somewhere.
Okay.
In Seiko.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
And I think it was a stunning watch. Really.
Okay. Cool.
Beautiful.
Cool.
Then And Grand Seiko showed me something that they will release later on this year, which will be very nice. It has a beautiful dial. So stay tuned.
Very nice.
I also want to talk about Patek.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. First of all their watches are now rated 30 meters, including the Aquanaut that used to be rated 120 meters. That doesn't mean that the watch changed. So the construction is still the same. It is still water resistant to 120 meters. But for the sake of simplicity, Patek decided to rate all their watches 30 meters, meaning you can wash your hands, you can swim, you can shower. They also told me you can even dive with them to 30 meters. I'm not sure if that's entirely, but that they said it.
That doesn't sound right.
No, but I think it's also a statement. So people are complaining about it or wondering, perhaps that's the better word. Mm. And this was their answer. So there's no further explanation from them. Mm. But I also feel they did it because I think they're fed up with all the people that are too much into specifications. And I also believe that the Patek buyer does not care about those specifications anyway. If they have the guarantee that you can swim with your Aquanaut, it's fine. They don't care.
Yeah, I don't really understand.
They don't look
why,
at the specs.
I mean, if the watch is... So the construction hasn't changed
at all.
It's
the same watch, different dial.
Same watch, but I don't know why you would not say, okay, you can go like I had at 100 if you can do it with the watch.
Because they actually told me is we got so many questions about 120 meters. What does that mean? Mm. Oh, that watch is 30 meters. What does that mean? That's 100 meters. What does that mean? I said, no, everything's 30 meters. You can swim, dive, shower, wash your hands with it. Period.
Okay.
Just, it is what it is. And I think it's just the Patek buyer doesn't care.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Only, I think the watch nerds care. That might also be Patek buyers. Mm.
The enthusiasts, yeah.
Enthusiasts, but I think it,
ultimately. I know you don't dive with your watches, RJ.
No, I swim with a watch, and last 2 years ago, I made a joke with my Plo Prof that I went 70 centimeters underwater.
Yeah.
and I think that's what it is. I don't see people diving 50 meters with their Patek Nautilus anyway.
But yeah, what did we think of the watches themselves?
Releases? So that's the next point. I really like them. I see people complaining and bitching about it. Oh, denim strap, yada, yada, yada. But I think it's nice, it's fresh. And if that is what bothering you, change the strap. Because it's just a strap.
Yeah.
It's a calf leather strap, so it's not denim. It's a calf leather with the motif of denim and the color.
Yeah.
I like the World Time a lot. Really a lot.
The colors are really beautiful.
Really beautiful, but I also like the mechanism of the date, that date will go backwards as soon as you change the point near Hawaii, I think, where the date will go back. I think that's a fun mechanism. I think it's really well done.
It's clever.
But what I really liked about Patek, and my colleague or colleague Lauritz will agree, is the ellipse with the gold bracelet.
Yeah,
I think it's so nicely done.
That's really cool.
Beautiful. It's really
I saw that
lovely.
One also. It was
I liked there Patek. Was, I believe it was new, it was a sort of salmon dialed, I don't know if, I think it was an annual calendar, something like this. That was also pretty pretty neat. We I don't think that we shot it, but it was but there was a picture of it on the wall in the when we were doing the photo shoot.
Okay.
It was really quite a nice one.
I've seen all the, so they have a presentation aside from the photo shoot where they have all the watches and you have to walk around this table with all
the representatives of Patek.
Room. And then you have all explanations and talk, but I didn't stop at that one indeed.
Right.
The ellipse and the World Time was really interesting.
Yeah.
And the new Aquanaut, I think it's also a nice, interesting piece. What they didn't show at the fair and Watches and Wonders, but what they showed on Wednesday evening during a Patek Philippe cocktail at their salon in the Rue du Rhône is the new marquetry watches.
Oh, okay. Right.
Like beautifully
the surfer.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, with the surfer. I think it's really a piece of art. And there was a demonstration done by the man that did the marquetry. Mm-hmm. It's really interesting to see.
Yeah.
It's really nice.
We saw that at Chopra also when we went.
Yeah.
It's really super
cool.
Nice.
Yeah, definitely.
Cool.
Yep.
Very, very nice. For me, another highlight when I look down here at my list, I can see, of course, Lange.
Lumen.
That's kind of a given. That was a much more of a highlight for me than the up down. Ab auf. Also that was just blue. So that was this didn't feel like anything too new. I prefer it in black, actually.
Yeah.
So that was kind of it's nice, right? To have something different. It's another option in the catalog. Good for them.
The lumen is really impressive.
But that was nice. Seeing it in person, it's truly a beautiful thing. And I like the honey gold, because the honey gold, it's a little bit more subtle. It's a little bit more, you almost think it's reflecting the natural light around you, and it's a white metal, but it's really nice.
Oh, yeah, I love it as well. It's really cool. And
the movement is always...
Yeah, for me, that's the thing with Lange. The movements, it's like a beautiful architecture.
600K though, again.
Yeah, which even is, more, 620, I believe. Yes,
yeah,
and then 30 pieces only.
Yeah.
It's 30 lucky nice. People.
Yeah, it's
for the ballers. Able to buy it. For the ballers, the German ballers.
Perfect. So that was obviously worth a mention. And then I also have to say Zenith. I quite like the Defy Extreme Diver.
Yes, that's my favorite as well.
I thought that was just a little bit... I didn't like it
in the press pictures.
No, me neither.
In the flash, super cool watch.
For sure. And that strap was nice. The sort of... It looked like a textile strap, almost like a sailcloth kind of thing, but it was really soft.
Cordura.
But it was very flexible. So it was more like a textured rubber, but really, really nice.
Yeah,
The Defy chronograph that just felt like something that was just it made sense. So there it is, right? Very nice, but not that special.
There it is.
And the Defy the revival thing. I kind of like that. It's a funky orange diver.
It's a little bit too small for me, but I can see why you like it. Yeah. And
they keep it true to the original, right? Yeah.
Which the quality of the watches is really nice, even under macro, because I come really really close to the watches, so I know when well.
Oh, for sure.
So the quality is super nice.
Yeah.
But about the design, I'm not too much of a fan of these. But that's my personal. Take,
it's so not a crowd pleasing design.
No,
crowd pleaser is the chronograph.
Yeah. Extreme. Cool. I think they did a great job
for sure. What's another highlight from you, Morgan? Vacheron.
Shall we talk about Tudor Rolex now? Already?
No, let's do Vacheron.
No, we got a couple.
Vacheron. Okay. Yeah. So I saw Vacheron. I shot the three rose gold with the green dial.
Mm-hmm.
So overseas. So you have the chronograph version, the three-hand version, and the not world timer, but the dual time. I don't know how
dual time.
Dual time. These are cool. Yeah. These are really cool. Yeah. And I think that the rose gold and that shade of green works really well together.
Really nicely done, yeah.
I mean, Cactus it wears green. Well on the wrist. It's just a good oversea.
Yeah. I was a little bit tired of green, to be honest.
Yeah, there was a lot of green
this
But this,
this,
is,
show.
This was a good-looking green.
Yeah. Yeah.
And of course, they did this 63 complication.
The pocket watch.
It's a pocket watch.
That's the table watch.
Yeah, table watch. Exactly. It's the size of a grapefruit.
That's pretty big.
It's unbelievable. But hey, again, another very, very, very technical achievement and very impressive technical achievement.
And also the titanium overseas with the tourbillon.
That was beautiful.
This was nice.
Yeah. 42.5 millimeter. Yeah. Yeah. Super really nicely done. Yeah.
And then there was the platinum. Everything is platinum. Monopoussoir again. It was impressive, but a little bit less sort of remarkable. It's cool, but I think from Vacheron, still the overseas take the prize for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. What did we think about Tag Heuer?
It starts well.
I saw four watches, and I think two are nice and two are not.
Oh, you saw two more than I did.
Yeah, the two I like are the Skipper in gold. Mm-hmm. I think it's really nicely done, well executed. Price is, I think, just above 20K, but I feel for gold chronograph, that's okay-ish.
Mm.
And the glass box, the silver panda.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was a nice addition on the bracelet.
Yeah.
Really cool bracelet. The bracelet tapers.
And you can have that taper on the regular glass box also, I think.
6.5K. Oh, okay. I think it's a very... nice watch for that price.
Nothing wrong with it. Expanding the range.
Yeah. I do have to say that I expected, because last year was the introduction of those models, I believe, that I don't see them that much in the flesh. I expected to see more, but I hardly see them in the flesh.
Yeah, true. The glass box. Yeah. You don't see it around a lot.
Yeah, it's a bit of a, I don't know.
Because you think for the price and what you get that people would really be jumping on it. But
know. But I like that model, those two models, Skipper and the glass box. I think the Monaco was interesting, but not 135K interesting.
Okay.
for me, that was completely out of whack.
Yeah. I didn't see it in the metal, so.
Yeah, me neither.
Yeah. But, yeah. And then it's the new Carrera and 36 millimeters with the lab-grown diamonds. Mm-hmm. They had those Carreras last year as well, the three-handers, mm-hmm. and I feel it's not, I don't feel it's so substantial. Dull. It feels a bit cheap, to be honest.
Okay. It's kind of filling a gap and sort of offering something at a sort of an entry level for the brand that people can just
buy. I feel so. It's to fill the catalog, and perhaps they sell like hotcakes. I don't know if if that's their bread and butter pieces, but I'm not so keen on them.
Okay.
So I think Tag Heuer has seen stronger years in terms of introductions.
Last year, definitely.
Last year was good.
Yeah, last year was really nice.
But yeah, I like the Skipper best, I have to say, from all the watches I've seen from them. Then next door was Zenith, and then the next door was Hublot.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't get to see those, but...
I like the stuff that they were doing, including there was a, I never know the name, the Big Bang with the pink sapphire. I think it was kind of cool.
Like that, the old transparent one,
yeah,
you mean?
That, yeah, that was, I like
that. That was impressive.
Yeah, it was an impressive watch.
Don't drop it, but it was impressive.
No, I think it was an impressive watch, but they also made the Hublot, I think, Classic Fusion in 38.
The one in gold and titanium, you mean?
No, there was steel. I saw ceramic. I think I saw one in gold. So they had different models, but they had the Arabic numerals on the dial. And it reminded me a little bit, you guys are too young for this. I think it was 92, but I'm not sure. Well, then, was the AP Royal Oak Nick Faldo edition.
Is it the one with the Royal Oak writing on the dial and the numbers?
And the numbers, yeah. So it reminded me of those.
Yeah, a little bit.
A little bit. And I like those back in the day. Yeah, and right. I like these new Hublots as well. Yeah. 38, I think it's a nice size for men and women.
What, do you know what the price
and
was
everything
on those?
In between? No idea.
I don't know.
Okay. No, if you have to ask. Okay, so two more brands that I think we can get to before we jump into Tudor and Rolex. We also, in that neck of the woods, there was also Oris.
Yeah.
Who basically sort of shaved down the Aquis a little bit. It was a case update. There were some differences update. on the bracelet, which got a little quick adjust system.
Very clever.
The markers were also a little bit different in some of the models. And the dial was a little bit revamped with a matching date window. I thought that especially the trimming down the case so that it doesn't just slant downwards, but then it has a little bit of a chamfering in. It was really clever. It really changes how the watch feels and wears on the wrist. It sort of removes a bit of the perceived thickness.
Yeah.
And it was really quite a nice one.
Yeah.
The only thing is like you have the Sellita models, which don't have the quick adjust or the quick release on the bracelet.
Yeah.
But you still get that new revamped case shape. But cool that they maintain the Sellita models at a sort of a reasonable price. Yeah. And then if you want, you have the Caliber 400 stuff
And that's 3.9K, I guess, right?
Yes.
I like them. The Aquis is there. I think they're bread and butter at Oris, at least in our market. Mm-hmm. And I really like their redesign. I think it was a well-received update.
But
I also noticed on
the comments
on the interwebs that people, what's the difference? This is ridiculous, yada, yada, yada. But I think they made very small incremental improvements.
That's what
really
Rolex
cool.
would do.
That's what Rolex always does. Yeah. And now Oris does it. I think it's very clever. Nicely done.
Yep, I agree. And 100%. Then the other brand is, it's two brands in one, but it's Frederic Constant and Alpina.
Yeah,
Frederic
nice.
Constant had a sort of, I think they call it the classic manufacture moon phase, which was quite nice. It's a Frederic
colors,
Constant that looks like a Frederic Constant, and it wears well, it looks good, and it's reasonably priced. I think that there's nothing wrong with their releases this year.
That's nice.
And just, really like good stuff, you know.
And they came also up with the GMT from Alpina.
Yeah. And I like that, the smaller, it's a smaller Alpina.
It wears super
Extreme.
Well on the wrist, on the rubber strap, and it's smaller compared to the regular Alpina diver watches, which is a little bit big.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This one goes really well on the wrist. It's like 39 millimeters and it's not too thick.
Yeah.
So it's nice. And I think
and the diver was also sized down.
Yeah. And there's also the diver in 39
Which also works really well. Cause I believe the previously it was maybe 41, 42, 43.
Yeah.
And it was just a little bit too big, that Alpina Extreme, but now it works better in this, this case size, at least for me personally. And the GMT was really cool.
I think
with a whitish silvery dial. I thought that was,
For the price you get,
really nice.
You get a nice watch. I mean, it's very solid. The design or not, that this is another question, but Quality wise, it's super nice.
Definitely.
Okay.
Perfect. Tudor and Rolex.
Yeah.
Let's start with.
Yeah. Let me kick off a little bit. Yes. I felt that this year in general that Tudor took the stage.
Yeah, of course.
And Rolex stepped a little bit back.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What I also heard through the grapevine is, and that's also an extension of what I said earlier about the market, is that Rolex, the rumor is that Rolex will decrease its production by a little bit. Mm. So there's also an interesting...
Decrease?
Yeah, decrease.
Okay.
An interesting message.
Supposed to be like that.
But at least they are scalable, so that's good if that's the case. I think Tudor did well. Tudor is not for me in general. But that has nothing to do with the quality or the watches as such.
Yeah,
I explained it before in another podcast, I think. I grew up with the five-digit Rolexes. And that's exactly what Tudor, in my opinion, did this year. They created new Tudors that are so inspired on these five-digit Rolexes from the past. And I think that's a super, super clever thing. Because I grew up with those five-digit Rolexes. I think there's a young generation now that sees their older brothers or fathers or uncles, whatever, with those five-digit Rolexes. Yeah. A new Rolex would be out of range for them, or not available, both. So I think these are a perfect, not even alternative, but a perfect solution for that.
And Mythos also on top of
that. Yeah, but I saw the, but I don't think that's a selling point, to be honest. But I saw the GMT Black Bay. I said, man, that's the GMT 67-10 I used to have in the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. And it's really well done. For me, the little rings, they should not have done it.
Which ring you mean?
The rings around the hour markers. The what is it?
The golden accent. Oh,
yeah, I would not have done that.
Right.
I can like it.
And if they did not have do that, it would be even more the vintage GMT Master style. Yeah.
I think.
Although
we'll
it looked a little bit like a 6542 GMT Master.
Mm. We'll see iterations, I think. I guess that'll be, because obviously new movement slims down by almost, I think, 1.9 millimeters, which is, that's really nice because Tudor really listened to what people were saying. I mean, we weren't the only ones saying, oh, the GMTs are a little bit thick, the Black Bay Pro is a little bit thick. And so I think that it's really nice that they listen and that they pulled that off. I mean, obviously having Kinesi as their manufacturer, they can work rather quickly. Mm-hmm. It's a hell of a manufacturer. It's a hell of a resource to have. So they were able to turn that around pretty quick in a couple of
super
years.
Nice. Yeah.
And I think that it's an exciting thing because it's a great movement. It's a flyer GMT, Meta certified. And, you know, it's probably, great as in it's a workhorse reliable movement.
Well, you prove my point. It's for your generation.
Yeah,
I think
true.
It's a very
true.
Nice,
no, but that's
nice
sure.
piece. And the Black Bay 41 is also an interesting watch. And
it's a Tudor
like
sub.
That
I prefer it over the current Submariner.
Yeah, but you told me I did a post yesterday on my Instagram.
I think it's nice. It looks like I don't know, 6536 or 5508 with the big crown, no crown guards.
It lets
super nice.
It lets people like me and perhaps Morgan and other people in sort of our wheelhouse buy a five-digit Rolex sub.
Yeah.
Looking watch with a legitimate claim of being part of the group without having to pay 10 or 12K for it. Because that's the thing, 10 or 12K is like completely...
The prices of the new Tudors is the same as what I used to pay for those Rolexes.
But I think the quality is also pretty similar.
I think it's better. I think the new Tudors are better than the five-digit Rolexes.
In the end, I think it's a really fair
brand. You get tools, micro-adjust, you get a lot of things. Yeah, yeah. Definitely.
That's very interesting. So, and then if I jump to Rolex, and then you can jump on...
And I think then we'll wrap up because we've got a...
I liked Rolex a lot. What I didn't like was the GMT Master. I saw we got a lot of traffic on a GMT Master, but I felt it's the 2007 GMT Master with a new bezel.
It was not really fantastic.
And I feel that what I like best at Rolex was this 36 millimeter dated with a white dial.
With the Roman numerals on it?
Yeah, there was only one. Then I feel that's a little bit of a issue that it appears that it's not that exciting for Rolex this year. Yeah. I think the weird one, of course, was the deep sea. There was no sea dweller on the dial or back. It's only deep sea in full gold. And I think it's a bit silly to have a diving watch in gold, but people don't dive with it anyway. So it's a show-off piece or statement piece. But I think it was really well executed and it even sat nice on my wrist, I have to say. Mm-hmm. Sky dwellers. I'm not a big Sky Dweller fan, but I think the Jubilee in gold is something really nice.
The white dial also.
It's really well done.
There was a white dial already, I think, but I think the Jubilee in gold is something special. It looks sure. nice, feels nice. Mm.
Yeah, it has that weight to it, but yeah. at the same time, it's very solid but comfortable. It's
So it was a lot of gold at Rolex, and the one that we did not see because they didn't want to show to press.
Oh, yeah, but they did.
But we will see it later on. Okay. Is the new Daytona Le Mans in gold. Yeah. They discontinued the previous one in white gold. Mm-hmm. And now they have this yellow gold one. But there was no communication whatsoever on it.
No.
Yeah. But I like that one. It's nice.
I don't know if you mentioned it, but the deep sea in...
I was talking about
it. I thought so. Some of the people had a bit of a problem with it. But I think that, to be honest, it's such a... just wild and out there watch, and it doesn't have to make sense. Yeah. Already a dive, like a Rolex Submariner in gold has never made mm-hmm. sense, mm-hmm. but somehow it's never not been an incredibly cool thing.
No.
Oh. Like a yellow gold Rolex sub with black. Yeah. It's so special, but and this is just fun. Let it be. If it's not for you, carry on, but it's cool.
And also not for me, but perhaps the highlight for Rolex, I prefer the day-date,
mm-hmm. Oh,
it's the 1908 with the guilloche dial.
Yeah,
yeah.
There That's was a cool
I,
line.
I asked because there was some misunderstanding I saw also on my Instagram feed. Mm-hmm. The guilloche dial, it's not done by hand, so it's not like Breguet.
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. like stamped.
But it's carved, so it's not stamped.
Okay. Right.
It's still carved, but not by hand. So it's more or less the same kind of equipment, but... Driven by a machine and someone who turns the wheel. I like to watch. I think the price is not that crazy. Just over 30K for a platinum Rolex. I've seen worse.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, true.
So Rolex was a little bit slow.
It wears well. The size is good.
Yeah, but I really feel that they gave the stage to Tudor this year.
Yeah.
Oh, it was nice. Yeah. I mean, Tudor. I can't wait to see what they're going to come up with. Because if you don't like that guilty... mm-hmm. GMT color that they came up with this year.
You can dress the
they will probably put color. Different dials on it, like maybe a more black, like more standard blue or whatever. So I think it's nice.
Perfect.
To wrap up.
Yes, our highlight of the
disappointment.
Week.
Disappointment.
Oh, disappointment. Oh,
disappointment of the fair.
A disappointment.
No blue M&Ms?
No blue M&Ms at show par. Yeah.
Shall I?
Yeah, you start with a disappointment.
Panerai.
Yeah.
Okay. Man, that was cringy.
It was all Luna Rossa models.
Yeah.
GMT.
It feels like you have a advertising campaign on the wrist.
Yeah, but with the strap Pirelli, and the region,
I don't know what they do. Prada, they have all these collabs, and this Luna Rossa thing was just too much.
But Omega also does America's Cup, but it's one model that they release in the summer, and that's it. And Tudor also did it, and same thing during the summer.
Yeah, but you can introduce these things during the summer or whenever. But if you have a Watches and Wonders show, and the only thing you introduce are Luna Rossa models, I think it's a bit. I feel that Panerai is further away from what they used to be than ever. Yeah. And that's a pity because I like the brand. I like the submersible is
a
good favorite of mine, but not in this
configuration.
Constellation. Yeah, yeah. No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we'll see what they do for the rest of the year. There might be some more interesting stuff coming. So it could be they may be able to redeem themselves somewhat. And so we'll see.
Anything that was not a Watches and Wonders because there were over 200 brands exhibiting in the city.
Yes.
I have only been to one, and there was also one of my absolute favorites.
Me too.
The Singer Dive Track.
Oh, yeah.
Beautiful
that
watch.
That thing is
a proper diver.
Unbelievable.
That's a real tool watch.
That is how the Plorprof today should be.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's really cool.
It has all the vibes.
No, but it's too high end for Omega.
It's 80,000 euros, but still, like, amazing.
Yeah.
So good.
Stunning. Really, really impressive.
Design-wise, everything-wise, just a really, really, really impressive watch. Yeah, I think that was my highlight from the show. I loved seeing the new Doxas. I'm still not sure if they... I kind of prefer the full-size one.
I don't know, because when you put the small one on the wrist, you're like, it's a little bit too small. And then you put the regular one on the wrist, you're like... The other one was not too bad, actually.
Yeah,
you don't really know.
So I'm still a little bit, the verdict's still out on that one. But and I think biggest disappointment was not being able to handle the yellow gold Tortues.
Yeah.
I think that those would have potentially been one of the best from the releases at the fair.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
But I think that's it.
But I saw some people manage to get hands on with and put the watches on their wrist.
Yeah, because I think they opened the vitrine at the end of the fair.
Yeah, so we were gone already. Thank you, Cartier.
It was it was a great show, and it was nice to see all of our friends and colleagues that we only get to see in many cases only once a year. So it was it was a good show.
Yeah,
a little bit lower pace, a little bit quieter, still a lot of content.
Yep.
And so I would say to everybody to stay tuned to the website for some upcoming hands-on reviews. We'll do a very quick comment of the week from last week, which goes to Justin Galore 123, who said it was about gifting watches, right? So he said, "I got my fiance a vintage Cartier Panthère as an engagement gift with a small engraving on the back. Luckily, it went down well and it never leaves her wrist."
Very nice.
That's a gift done well. And he clearly must have followed our advice. Or, well, it probably happened well before the podcast.
I guess so.
But he got it.
Very good.
All good. Fantastic. Well, thanks a lot, guys. And we'll follow up to this episode, I think, with another discussion with the other two guys that were the show with me. But for now, make sure to like, subscribe, comment below, and of course, tune in next week for another episode of Fratello Talks. See you then.